I was thinking, I'll adjust my thinking a little bit, but I was thinking to speak something from the Bhagavatam that's in relation to something from Bhagavad Gita, and share a little bit how the Bhagavad Gita is basics. What we need to know is in Bhagavad Gita. If we can understand Bhagavad Gita, we have our ticket back to God, and if that's the case, then why do we need anything other? Why Srimad Bhagavatam? So that's the topic. I've been reading consecutively and speaking on verses from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. I'm going to continue with that, but show how it connects with Bhagavad Gita. Not just connects, it's a further expansion of the message of Bhagavad Gita. Persons that are not familiar with Lord Kapila Dev so much, they know a few things. Lord Kapila Dev is an incarnation. Specifically, he's a Shaktivesh avatar. Shaktivesh avatar means one who's bearing, living entity, who is bearing the potency of the Supreme Lord. So, in such completeness that Shaktivesh avatar is none different than the Supreme Lord. So there's these two categories, Jiva and Vishnu. Jiva Tattva, Vishnu Tattva. Incarnations of the Lord commonly are Vishnu Tattva. From the spiritual world, they descend to this material world for some purpose of six different categories. And of those six categories, one of those is this Shaktivesh avatar, some of whom are jivas, like we're jivas. Of course, the guna avatars, for example, Lord Brahma, he's guna avatar, he's presiding over Rajogun for the purpose of creation of this universe. And he's a jiva, and he's in a category of avatar, guna avatar. And then Lord Shiva, he's in charge of the destruction of the universe, and he's in his own category, is Shiva tattva. And then Vishnu, in Vishnu tattva, for the purpose of maintenance of the creation. Those are guna avatars, one category of guna avatars, but another is Shaktivesh avatar, not to spend too much time on this, but that's Lord Kapila Dev. He's in that category. And as a Shaktivesh avatar, he's a certain, there are different subdivisions of Shaktivesh avatars that are described by Rupa Goswami in a very amazing book called Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Won't go into that too much. But he, Kapila Dev, isn't it the special category that's like Dhanvantri, who gave Ayurveda, who's like Dattatreya, who gave very elevated teachings on transcendental knowledge, like Vyasadeva, who wrote the Vedas and certainly gave transcendental teachings. And they're characteristics that commonly they manifest pastimes that are deeply renounced and detached from this world. And they live for a very long time. Chiranjivas, or long, long duration of life. And they give very elevated teachings, especially very elevated teachings. So when people think of Lord Kapila Dev, commonly they think of, they don't know so much, very elevated teachings. So elevated it's way beyond anything that a little me can possibly even think of understanding, because it's so elevated. And there are something like 9 chapters in the third canto discussing Lord Kapiladeva's teachings. And what I'm going to be discussing, you can see, it's not so way elevated that you can't even... But it's taking the teaching that's there in Bhagavad Gita and giving another layer, another higher perspective on these basic teachings. But they resonate completely. The part that's very elevated is the description of the elements, the 24 elements of creation, and how they come into being. That's high science. It's very, very sophisticated technology, spiritual technology. If you wanted to be a creator, how would you do it? Well, this is how Lord Vishnu, even before Lord Brahma appears, he brings into being from the unmanifest state to the manifest state all the elements. Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Cause and effect. And it goes back to the original cause. That's Lord Vishnu. And something on the spiritual side moves, and then matter starts to move, and then subtle matter into grosser matter, and that becomes the next grosser level of matter. And it's very, very amazing. And those who are not devotees, the scholarly impersonalists, they like Sankhya philosophy because they can twist it and turn it and God disappears. Everything comes from, and they can just fill in the blank, and they do. Everything comes from nothing, or everything comes from homogeneous Brahman, undifferentiated smoothie. Okay. And so if you hear this part carefully of Lord Kapiladeva's teachings, you won't get away with the undifferentiated smoothie rendering of, you know, the nirvishesha shunyavad rendering or interpretation. It's not going to happen. You'll see from what the verses that we're going to be discussing. So the verses that I'm going to be reading are Canto 3, Chapter 32, verses 3 through 7. And it's in a section where Kapiladeva is answering a question of Devahuti that goes back 7 chapters. She wants to know how to become free from the materialistic conception of life, because she's feeling now that her husband Kardava Muni has just gone, because now Kapiladeva, having been born according to the prediction of Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma, an incarnation of the Lord would appear as the son of Kardava Muni and Devahuti. I mean, we have some wonderful children. They're not incarnations of God. Wonderful children. But an incarnation of Lord Vishnu appeared as their son. And when he was of age to maintain and take look after his mother, as was the commitment at the time prior to his marriage, that he would, with Swayambhuva Manu, the father of Devahuti, he would leave his wife, Devahuti, in charge of her son, their son, and go to the forest and continue his Satya Yuga process of spiritual perfection. which he had already attained, but he was showing by example, this is what you do with your life. You complete your worldly responsibilities and you continue on the path of achieving spiritual perfection. Even you've already become perfect, as he had become perfect. Just to set example. Like there's that discussion in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna wants to leave the battlefield. From the outset, he gives all of his reasons, moral reasons, ethical reasons, good sounding reasons, which Krishna gives him an A for, but then gives him an F for applying his principles on the bodily platform instead of on the spiritual platform. And then discusses Sankhya philosophy, the distinction between matter and spirit, chapter 2, first part, Bhagavad Gita. So Arjuna gets the idea that Krishna doesn't want him. In fact, Krishna specifically says, Arjuna, you're saying, if I engage in this battle, then I'll incur sin. Well, the fact of the matter is, Arjuna, if you do not engage in your prescribed duty, you incur sin. Neglect of the performance of prescribed duty will bring a sinful reaction. So you don't have the adhikar, you don't have the qualification for karma sannyas, you have the qualification for karma palatyag, renouncing the fruits of your work. That's your qualification. So do that. So then Arjuna comes up with another idea. Well, what if I attain spiritual perfection? Then can I renounce? Then I'll have the adhikar. And Krishna says, no. Because when you have the adhikar, then you'll do to show by example. This is what you do. Follow? This is what a perfected devotee does. He performs his duties. Because he's showing those that aren't perfect, here's how you do it. He's showing by example. Like checkmate. He wants to wiggle, and there's no wiggle room. Perform your prescribed duty. So now, in chapter 32 of Lord Kapiladeva's teachings, he's just finished describing, in the previous chapter, the movement of the soul, of the living entity, through the course of prior to conception, life in the womb of the mother, what that experience is like from the living entity that's within the womb of the mother, and it's not a very fun picture. And then praying to the Supreme Lord, let me out here. And he comes and forgets everything because of all the reasons that are given. And then in babyhood and boyhood and, fast forwards into a conclusion that is the punchline of the whole previous chapter. So I read it this morning, I'll read it again now. Therefore, all of the whole previous chapter is to make this point. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as soul, nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life, realizing the true nature of the living entity,